Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome. This is the Your Wealth Hour with Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700 AM with your host,
Karen Cassino,
and myself, Ryan White. We have with us in studio today, Ray Lewis. He is an attorney and founder of the Elder Protection Center, which we'll be talking about more, elderprotectioncenter.com, as well as Frank Fiorito. He is a fiduciary and CEO of Exclusive Estate Administration. Their website is eeadmin.com, eeadmin.com, and at least a one-time, maybe second-time repeat offender, right, Frank?
Yes.
Yes, yes. I think it might be a third, fourth time we've had them on before. Him and his son, Brian, are frequent guests here on the show. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining us. And today we are going to talk about how to protect, well, an aging parent, but really anybody from financial elder abuse. And although our focus is going to be on the financial part, there's a whole second segment that the Elder Protection Center, as well as Frank, their EA, deal with, which is not just the financial protection, but the physical protection as well. However, the focus today is just going to be on the financial elder protection. So, Ray, why don't you tell us what that means and kind of give us an idea of why this is such a problem?
Well, there is a specific legal definition of what elder financial abuse is, but the bottom line is you're wrongfully taking something from a person 65 years of age and older. It's a huge problem. It can be either through outright theft or through fraud, some sort of misrepresentation. You're trying to find ways to get older people to part with their money.
Makes a lot of sense. And you have some statistics here about exactly how much money is being taken?
Yes. I mean, any instance of elder abuse financially is a big problem. But in terms of quantifying it, there's a often cited to study from 2009 reflecting it was somewhere above $3 billion. And most recently in 2015, it's been estimated to be as high as $36 billion in the United States.
$36 billion is the estimate for what seniors will lose this year?
Correct.
That's quite a problem.
Wow.
$36 billion. So I count on my toes. That's $3 billion a month. Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot. Okay. So how does the Elder Protection Center come into play here?
Well, Elder Protection Center, our goal is to protect the elderly from financial and physical neglect. We do that by identifying the signs and symptoms of financial abuse. We provide important tips on reducing the risk of it occurring in the first place. And ultimately, we explain what to do in the event that a loved one has been abused or exploited financially.
So it's a resource. And again, the website is elderprotectioncenter.com, correct?
Correct.
It's a resource where people can go to find tips on what to do if they think it's happening and ways to prevent it from happening. Is that right?
That's correct.
Got it. And give me an example of another example of a tip in both categories, something someone might be able to do to prevent it from happening and someone might be able to do what to do if it is happening.
Well, there's several ways to prevent it from happening, or at least reduce the risk of it happening. But we would say the primary problem is theft. So that's the biggest part of the elder financial abuse is simply jewelry, things of value in a home that a caregiver, even a family member, may have access to. So one of the really important steps you can take is to lock it up, photograph it, have an inventory of all your jewelry. In the event it is stolen, it helps retrieve it. The investigators go to the pawn shops. If you have a picture of it, it's easier to identify, and it's also easier to make a claim with your insurance company.
Now, Frank, we're going to come back to this, but you've got a whole system set up for exactly that, right, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I do have an example I want to talk about later of that same incident you just talked about.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Great. So what are some of the signs and symptoms? I mean, of course, money being gone or jewelry being gone are obvious ones, right? But what are some of the signs and symptoms of financial elder abuse?
Well, any change in the financial activity, you might have some unusual occurrences and transactions with the bank statements.
Okay.
For example, there may be ATM withdrawals at a time when the elder is clearly at home or is asleep. There are bills that aren't being paid. You can have deeds to property changing hands. A sudden financial change in the condition, the financial condition being the money's gone from the bank. There's so many different ways of taking money from older folks wrongfully that there's I can't list them all. Also, another common thing is the elder's will suddenly changes, or somebody becomes a power of attorney, unbeknownst to family members.
Interesting. We're talking with Ray Lewis. He is the founder of the Elder Protection Center. The website is elderprotectioncenter.com. That's the website, elderprotectioncenter.com. And one more time here, just to get an understanding of the gravity of this problem, $36 billion this year is estimated to be stolen from just the elderly, right? That's just the elderly through things that potentially could be prevented if you're to visit the Elder Protection Center.
That's correct. And that is, you're absolutely right. It's individuals 65 years of age and older. And of course, there's a lot going on with other folks as well. But that number is specifically for the 65 year and older.
And I think one of the reasons we're focusing on that age bracket is the ways that people might take money from them are different than the way they might take money from a 40-year-old, right? And financial abuse of a 40-year-old might happen in a different method. And you guys have a lot of colorful stories that we are going to get to that really highlight what we're saying. But I want to make sure we're clear on the problem before we jump ahead to that.
So obviously the big thing is people stealing assets from elderly. And I'm a forensic accountant that frequently gets hired on cases after the money has already been taken from individuals. And so there's, you mentioned jewelry, but the big other thing, obviously, is the bank accounts and the cash sitting in the house, but more so the bank accounts and the investment accounts. And what do you both recommend on securing that? What are some of the suggestions you have for relatives to, you know, maybe get the bank accounts where they're the second name on the account and the statements come to them? What are some of the suggestions that the two of you have on that? Ray? Frank. Or Frank? We'll start with Frank.
Yeah. What I would do if they're going to have a family member get involved with that is to make sure that they're constantly checking that online, the balances. There's also a service out there, too. I'm not here to plug that service, but they actually monitor it automatically, and then all of a sudden a fraud alert will come up. And if I can disclose the name of that, it's EverSafe. We've partnered with them. And it's an automatic, it's what the banks used to do when they used to go ahead and turn around and let you know that, hey, did you go to the nail place, Mrs. So-and-so? Did you go to the gas station and put this much gas in? They would do that because they had some kind of check and balance in there. But I'm going to tell a story a little bit later what happened where it was unchecked. But this new service that's out there, it will detect the fraud, it'll detect irregularities in the spending habits, and let that person that's monitoring that account know that there's something going on. And then we can go back in, or the family member can go back in and check that out and see what's going on.
I agree with Frank in terms of having a second set of eyes on the account activity. And a real more general protection is don't allow your older parent or grandparent to become isolated. That's when they become vulnerable. So keep an eye on their patterns. If let's say they're not going to church, if you're in the clergy and you notice someone's not showing up for church, go by, knock on the door, make an unannounced visit. And if it's one of your parents, make sure you talk to them every day on the phone or see them as often as you possibly can.
It's a big deal to, at some point, get an idea of what they have. Correct, in terms of what bank accounts do you have, what real estate do you own? And having that discussion with them, maybe when their mind is all there at some point, and getting a list of that with your family members and knowing where everything is. Part of that would be setting up a trust or something like that at some point. But you know, what do you suggest as a way, Ray, of figuring out what it is they have and getting a good idea of that so that you can get a handle on it before something happens?
Well, my response would be to sit down with them. And you're talking, if this is before some sort of dementia or incapacitation takes place, that's the best time to do it, is be proactive, not reactive. Sit down with them, go through their accounts, look at their mail. It's a good opportunity to spend time with them as well. And if they are, if they've already become incapacitated, then you should get a pro involved. Get somebody, a fiduciary, or get an accountant, a forensic accountant such as yourself, that can get in there and look at the books.
You know, someone shared a tip with me before. When it comes to ATMs, of course, there's cameras on all of them, but nobody really knows when to look, right? And you had mentioned a scenario where if grandma's taking money out of the ATM at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's probably not grandma. But someone also pointed out to me that if a thief is to steal your card and somehow have the PIN number go to the ATM, they're not going to take out $20, right? They're going to go for the whole amount, which is usually $300. So what they recommended is, as a just general person, never take out $300. Take out $200, take out $220, take out some number that you know. If it says $300, it's not you. So you know exactly when to go back and look through. And it seemed like a good tip. So I think this will surprise you. Who are the perpetrators of this financial elder abuse? You've got seven people listed here, but the top one, that one hurts.
It does hurt. Unfortunately and sadly, it's family members. That's the typical scenario I get when someone calls, is the 45 to 50-year-old son, and could be a daughter, living at home with mom. Mom is elderly. The son is unemployed, may have a substance abuse problem, and he starts to change the will, has mom execute a quick claim deed for the property, takes the mom's money, and then the other siblings, they don't know about it until generally after the theft has already occurred, and it's a little too late. So that's the sad reality, is that it's family members.
You've got on here caregivers, domestic helpers, and really unlicensed, unregulated professionals. And I'd like to explain briefly what that is, because I think it's a little bit scary.
Well, that would just be the handyman knocking at the door. Doesn't have a license. Sells them a product that is unnecessary, or provides a service that's unnecessary. A common situation would also be, and this would go to one of our tips, is you might get a knock on the door and the person wants to tell you that they're going to be trimming a tree in your neighbor's house. They'd like an opportunity to go in your backyard so they can look at the tree and get an idea of where they need to lace it out. And while they're doing that, the crook's buddy runs in the house and steals something.
Got it. We're talking with Ray Lewis. He is the founder of the Elder Protection Center. The website is elderprotectioncenter.com. That's the website, elderprotectioncenter.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with Frank Fiorito, CEO of Exclusive Estate Administration, learn a little bit more. He's got a lot of colorful stories for us, and learn exactly how a fiduciary can come in to help ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Ray Lewis. He is the founder of the Elder Protection Center. The website is elderprotectioncenter.com. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here to Frank Fiorito. He is a CEO and a fiduciary at Exclusive Estate Administration. And Frank, why don't you tell us, for those of us out there that don't know, what is a fiduciary?
If, I'm going to go ahead and define that for you, Ryan. And let me read it to you. A fiduciary is someone who accepts the responsibility for taking care of the needs or property of another person for the benefit of that person. The fiduciary serves the role of trust. The person serves by a fiduciary's places trust in fiduciary to manage his or her affairs solely for his or her benefit and not for the fiduciary benefit. And some of the roles that we play as a fiduciary would be things like conservator, guardian, Power of attorney, trustee. So those are some of the things that we do as a licensed fiduciary.
Got it. Got it. That's a lot. I mean, it's a, that's a lot of power and a lot of trust, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we're scrutinized by the Department of Justice, Secret Service, and the FBI because we handle billions of dollars worth of assets.
Wow. Wow. Billions of dollars worth of assets. Well, you've got tips to protect against financial abuse and identity theft. And we talked previously about the little things disappearing, like the jewelry and stuff like that. That's number one here on your list, right? And tell me, and you kind of have a solution for that, right?
Have a solution for that, but I also want to tag into something else that happened, and okay. The solution didn't work. So we're always trying to stay ahead of the bad guy.
Okay.
But the best thing to do when we come in as fiduciaries, we will go ahead and take an inventory so we know what is in that house when we show up. And then we did that on this one case that we were on. And then at the end, when the person died, we went into the safe to check the jewelry, and all the stones were missing. So that was very clever of the caregiver that was in on that house taking care of my client. So even though we took the precaution with the inventory, she got into the safe. It was a keyed safe and removed all the stones and every piece of jewelry that was in there. But for the most part, they're not that clever. We do the inventory, and we do have a base number, and we take pictures and everything else. So then at the end, we do it again, and then we see where we're at.
Well, you're not the cops. Your job isn't to keep them out of the safe. Your job is to identify what was in the safe. Which is exactly what you did, right? Because if you wouldn't have taken pictures of the jewelry, you wouldn't have had the jewelry to know the stones were gone.
Right. And it's a good thing that we did have that documented. So then we did the police report. I knew exactly which caregiver was capable of doing that. And then we did nail her in the end.
Oh, yeah?
In the end, we got her. So, and it's because we did do the inventory. So any of the fiduciaries, the good ones will take that inventory and they will have that benchmark.
Got it. Got it. So you have here on your list, carefully select a caregiver. While I think we would all love to do that, how does one actually go about doing that?
You surely want to make sure that you don't go independent. You don't take somebody out of Craigslist. You want to go ahead and pick up somebody that's with a licensed agency or a bonded agency and somebody that might be part of CASHA, C-A-S-H-A. It's an organization that kind of watches over their industry. But if you go and go through a licensed agency like that that's bonded, then you have a better chance of picking up a good caregiver. But it's not necessarily 100% rule, because I did – one of my cases we're going to talk about later was from a bonded agency, but we caught her. But for the most part, the percentages are lower when you go with a legitimate caregiving company.
Let me interject one thing as well. Don't assume the caregiver has had a background check just because you got – that caregiver from a referral source or an agency. There's no law in California requiring that.
Really?
Yeah.
So is there an easy way for you to bond people yourself, or do you just insist that the agency do that?
Either or. I would find out if they did a background check, and if not, then demand it or do it on your own.
So you'd want to hire an agency that did. I mean, that's one of the benefits, is to be able to offload that problem, right? So you want to find an agency that does a background check, wouldn't you?
The very first thing that they did when I had another story that we're going to be talking about later was the police department checked with the agency to make sure they did the background check. And if they wouldn't have done the background check, they would have been brought into the case too. But they did their due diligence. They did their background checks on every single caregiver that was in the house. Yeah. And, really does lower the percentage you're going to get nailed if you get a good agency that does those things.
That makes sense. That makes sense. We're talking with Frank Fiorito. He is a CEO and a fiduciary with Exclusive Estate Administration. Their website is eeadmin.com. One more time, that's the website, eeadmin.com. He's got a list of, well, I guess it's the 10 best ways of prevention. And a lot of it, you have stopgaps with exactly, I mean, it ties really, really well into, well, you're living this list, right? It's not a list you just give to everybody. This is what you do, amongst a lot of other things. But you've got notes by all of these about, yeah, we do this. This is exactly what we do. You have here is number 10, which is just like Ray said, never let a stranger in your house or your backyard. I mean, I think that makes common sense, right? But it's worth pointing out. You have on here, own a paper shredder. Do you find that people are scumming through the trash to get, what, Social Security numbers and stuff like that?
Yeah, once again, another story later, Ryan. But the bottom line is the one story we're going to talk about, she didn't shred her things. The caregiver got a hold of all that information that was sitting there, and then the story unveils from there. But and it wasn't a good ending. So
wow.
But you do want to shred everything you can. Once you've used it, if you do some kind of electronic filing, PDFs that are secure, I would shred the hard paper as soon as you can after that, so it's not laying around.
I bet you all didn't know, or probably those of us in this room know this, but once you put your garbage out at the curb, it is no longer your property and anybody can go through it, legally speaking. So anything you put out at the curb is open for public consumption. I know, it's shocking.
Really?
Absolutely. And so not only do the perpetrators of crimes go through that, your forensic accountant might have to go through that and have in the past.
And have in the past.
Have in the past. Not wow. myself, but certainly if you put things out at the, just so you know, it is up for legal consumption by anybody once you put it out at the curb.
That's right, Karen. The standard is if you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. I think I would have a reasonable expectation of privacy that my garbage is private, but it's been determined, no, that you do not have that reasonable expectation. So, good point.
So everyone should have a shredder in their home for their personal items. Everyone should. And so, just as a recommendation, you should shred everything, but certainly things like credit card offers, anything with bank account information, security information, pay stubs, things like that should always be shredded.
Well, this is good. Obtain a credit search on yourself. Use the monitoring like Eversafe, right?
Eversafe is a wonderful tool in our industry to be able to find out what is going on, especially when we're only there maybe once or twice a week. We're getting it 24/7, the reports back.
So should something pop up, it's going to alert you?
It will. And same with the credit agencies, too, that you're speaking about, Ryan. You'll get their reports in the mail, but once again, it's only maybe once or twice a month that you get that. If you pick like a TrueLock or a Eversafe or one of the services that do those, you can get daily reports on what's happening with your credit.
What are some of the things that they pick up that are noteworthy?
The biggest thing is the irregularity in the credit card usage or the ACHs. That's another big problem in the bad guy world where they steal ACH numbers, the check numbers, and then they start utilizing that to their advantage. And by keeping that away from the bad people by shredding it or keeping it in a locked safe, they're not going to be able to get the credit card information, not going to be able to get the ACH. But the credit application, nobody really talks that much about the credit application, but you want to shred those things. They come in so many times in the mail, and it's so easy just to fill it out. You get the credit card because you're there in the house anyway, and then they take the credit card and start using it. That's pretty easy.
Oh, so. Now you're talking about the blank application that gets mailed to you.
The blank application.
The blank application needs to be shredded.
You want to shred that too. If you're not going to use it and most people don't need it, shred it.
Oh, never thought of that.
You should pretty much shred everything that you get other than something generic like coupons. But if you just have a shredder at home, it's probably a good recommendation to just shred your mail that you don't use. It's just probably a good thing to do.
We're talking with Frank Fiorito. He's a CEO and fiduciary of Exclusive Estate Administration. His website is eeadmin.com. That's the website, eeadmin.com. We got time for one more before the break, and I think this one is especially funny. Why will I never win a foreign lottery, Frank? That doesn't seem fair. Are you sure it's not possible?
It is not possible. And anytime you have to pay to win the lottery, make sure you don't do it.
Or give them your bank account information. Don't ever give anyone your bank account information.
So are there a lot of scams out there where people are saying that the elderly has won the foreign lottery?
There is so much of that coming through the mail, and the U.S. Postal Inspector has a lot of great information, not only on the USPS website on what scams are out there, but they also go out and they do speaking engagements where you can go sit in on a seminar and learn more about that. But there is a lot of that going on right now.
And it's very serious. I had a potential client call my office. His father paid over $50,000 to an entity of unknown, he didn't know who it was, but he thought he had won a Canadian lottery. And they asked for the qualification fees, they asked for the pre-taxes on it, and he was a high-functioning, independently living gentleman. And you can imagine how that would make you feel, being taken advantage of that, that shame. He was embarrassed. It was hurtful for the family as well. It's very common.
Wow. Wow. When we come back, it's story time, right, guys? These both have lots and lots of stories about how they, well, got in the mix and were able to unwind what happened, but also, more importantly, by utilizing these tips, are able to prevent it from happening in the beginning, right? One more time, we have the Elder Protection Center, the website, elderprotectioncenter.com, as well as exclusive estate administration, eeadmin.com. And when we come back, we're going to hear examples of exactly how the thieves were thwarted by these two gentlemen ahead of us when we come back.
Welcome back. We are here with Ray Lewis, who is a attorney and the founder of Elder Protection Center at www.elderprotectioncenter.com, and Frank Fiorito, who is a fiduciary, and he is with Exclusive Estate Administration, and his website is eeadmin.com. So we've talked a lot about the problems, we've talked about the solutions, we've talked about some of the ways that fiduciaries are involved and some of the ways that attorneys and elder protection agencies are involved. Now we get to hear some stories. Now, as a forensic accountant that's been involved in elder abuse cases, I have seen mostly the family members that have stolen from the elderly. So, Ray, why don't you give us one of your good stories?
Well, earlier we were talking about who is doing it, and we identified family members, caregivers. One thing we didn't talk about, and I'd like to touch on, I think it's very important, is licensed professionals, the professional predator. And this happens every day around the country. It's a four-step process. Step one, you got to get a captive audience. So there is a free lunch offering. I had a case, a client who was in her mid-80s, in poor health. She received a brochure inviting her to a free lunch in El Cajon at an Arby's or someplace, Applebee's. And the topic was supposed to be on reverse mortgages. She showed up, and the topic was generally on reverse mortgages, but that wasn't the intent. The intent was to get her private information. So that's step one, is you get a captive audience. There was my client. Step two is you get the private information. You give them a brochure or a form to fill out to identify what assets they own, what property they own, what kind of accounts do they have. And then the next step is they create a need to move the assets. They'll inject fear. You're going to outlive your money and live in a nursing home. You need to protect your family's estate. You need to avoid probate. There's a number of ways to kind of place fear in them. And then step four is move the money into a commission-based product. So what happened to my client was she went to the free lunch and she gave them her information about her accounts. A few days later, there was a knock on her door. A gentleman introduced himself as a wealth preservation specialist. He asked to look at her. She had an annuity at the time. It was a very good annuity, it turned out, but he's not going to make money unless he gets her out of it. Sold her an annuity, made $20,000 in commissions, had the gall to go back a year and a half later and flip her into another annuity. And if you don't know what an annuity is, it's basically a long-term contract with an insurance company where you give them money and they agree to give you money back over time. It is not suitable for people that are in their later stages of life, mostly, because it ties up their money. And if you're an elderly person in poor health, you want liquidity. You want access to your money if something should go wrong. You want to modify your home, something to that extent. So I got involved with the case after the daughter did a wonderful job tracking it down. She reported it to the insurance commissioner. The insurance commissioner went after this guy and opened up five other cases on him. They had a Department of Justice was involved. They got him on recording, lying to people, saying that he could fix their trust. He wasn't a lawyer. He was just an insurance salesman. And I had the distinct pleasure of sitting through the administrative hearing and watching him lose his insurance license. And then I sued him. And I sued his company. And I received a treasure trove of emails between the father and the son about their scam, these trust mills. The son would be up in San Francisco emailing his father, oh boy, I just sold an annuity. She's 90 years old, but who cares? And the response would be, you know, cha-ching, keep the money coming.
Wow.
So that if you have a loved one that has attended any sort of a seminar, there's many that are very good and they're very educational, but it is a warning flag. I would find out what they did and who they talked to and make sure nobody's coming knocking at their door.
So we're talking with Ray Lewis, who is the founder of Elder Protection Center at www.elderprotectioncenter.com. That's ELDERPROTECTION Center.com. And so I get involved, too, in these cases, and not only are the professionals that will sell them commission products, but they'll also take all of their money, too. So they can clean out bank accounts, they can clean out investment accounts, and so you get involved in these things after the fact, too. So, Frank, as a fiduciary, what kind of stories can you tell us of maybe similar situations or things where you've been involved in similar situations?
I do want to echo what Ray was saying. I had a very similar case, and it's actually a very common way to defraud the seniors, and that's to get a mortgage for them, and it's usually a real high-interest mortgage for them because they don't owe any money on their house. They've been trained to pay everything off. And then they take the money from the mortgage, and then they turn around and buy an annuity. And then because the interest rate's so high on the mortgage that they got that was a bad mortgage, they're starting to use the money out of the annuity just to pay for the payment that's only an interest payment on that to pay the—and then they're taking money out of the annuity. And like Ray said, when they're getting into that age bracket, they have no business being in an annuity. But there was actually a criminal case, and our great deputy district attorney, Paul Greenwood, wound up successfully convicting a big ring of people where they went in and tried selling them all kinds of stuff, from life insurance to annuity to the mortgage and all the other stuff that went with that. And these people are now in jail. So that's a very common situation. I have a client myself that was more on the civil end. The annuity that they were selling was going into their bank account. It wasn't a real annuity. The annuity that my client got was one that wasn't a legitimate one. So we have an ongoing situation going now through the courts because of the bad guys that were involved with that one. Very, very common situation going on with the annuities, mortgage, and all the other stuff that goes along with it.
So we're speaking with Frank Fiorito, who is a fiduciary and the CEO with Exclusive Estate Administration. And he can be reached at eeadmin.com, eeadmin.com. Frank, you were telling us a story before we came in the studio about a house in Encinitas. Tell me about that.
This is the caregiving thing that we talked about earlier. Here's a tip, another tip before I get into the story. If you get a good caregiving agency that has care managers that are really good, they know when to bring a fiduciary in or somebody like a CPA, a forensic attorney, just to see what's going, or accountant, to see what's going on in that home. And the situation with this case that we shared earlier, the care manager identified the fact that, hey, we got a problem at the house. My client and her client was in the hospital having a severe, unbelievable operation and was in the hospital for a month. And he went on to tell me who was at his house. And it was the biggest thief known to that city to date. And I immediately got over there, confronted the gentleman with what was going on. He showed me the assets that were exposed and ready for him to take. And then I was able to stop it right in its track. We got the assets, the total thousands of dollars. I secured it. The bad guy did keep some of it in a bag. He forgot he had it in his bag, but I stayed with him. I went there 2 days, 3 days in a row and kept asking him, hey, I understand that. I got this feeling you still have some assets. So in the end, I was able to get all the assets back, and that's because of the care manager's diligent work. I got there in time because she got me in on time, and we stopped a several thousand dollar loss by doing that.
That's great. So is that the most common scheme that you see? We have a little bit of time before our next break. What other kinds of things do you usually see as a fiduciary where elderly are involved?
It's really in the home, and that we talked about the credit application. That is such a common situation there. What happens is they'll get a hold of the credit card numbers, they'll get a hold of the check ACH numbers, and then they start using them. So that's why we go back to the shredding these things. Don't leave it out exposed for anyone to see it, especially the caregiver, because they're there all the time.
Well, not just shredding it, but EEA has a mail management system, right? And how does that work?
What we do is if we can touch the mail, we can see what's going on. It's like telling us a story as this mail comes into the house. And by doing the bill paying, as simple as just writing checks for the client, we're seeing what kind of invoices are coming in that she's supposed to be paying, supposedly. So we're monitoring all of that as it comes into the house, and then we're reacting accordingly. And that's how I caught another caregiver stealing from one of my clients.
So you actually can pay their bills for them, and that's a big way of you guys knowing exactly what's going on with their finances. I would think that would be a great way of knowing exactly what's going on.
You definitely want to have either a professional fiduciary doing something like that, or a CPA doing something like that if they want to do that, or a trusted family member or a trusted friend, because a lot of these seniors do not have family here locally, so they have to do it long distance. You can't do that long distance. But if you have a professional in there, the money that we save by catching it will pay for the fee for a fiduciary.
So we're speaking with Frank Fiorito, who is a CEO at Exclusive Estate Administration, and he is at eeadmin.com. After the break, we are going to talk more about some interesting stories and maybe a little bit more on prevention before things happen.
He is the founder and attorney with the Elder Protection Center, as well as Frank Fiorito, CEO and fiduciary with Exclusive Estate Administration. This has turned into the story hour, right, guys?
That's right.
So we talked a little bit about prevention methods, and we talked a little bit about some of the common scams. And that's kind of where we're going to come back to, is tell us some stories about the scams you run into. And these are real life examples. Ray's got a really good one. Go ahead, Ray.
This is not a story that I have personal experience with. I heard it from Paul Greenwood. He's an exceptional attorney with the District Attorney's Office here in San Diego, and really a nationally recognized leader in his elder crimes unit. Before I get to that, I wanted to say, and we talked about this a little off the air just now, it's not just about the money. I mean, the real crime is the loss of the dignity that the elder suffers as a result of losing trust in somebody and being scammed. They're ashamed, they're embarrassed, and that's no way that you want your mom or your grandmother to ever feel at the hands of some crook. But back to Paul's story. There was this elderly woman in Point Loma, and she was out front of her house trimming her bushes, or she had little rose bushes there. And two guys would walk up to her in suits and show her a badge. And they had business cards. They introduced themselves as FBI agents. And they asked this woman where she banked. And she provided the name of her bank. And they said, well, that's good, because we're conducting an investigation in that bank. What we need you to do is help us. So we want you to go in there tomorrow, call them today, and tell them that you're going to be removing all your money. You're going to bring that back to your house, and we're going to put some invisible ink on it, and then you're going to go back and redeposit the money. But don't tell anybody what you're doing, because we don't know who the bad person is. So this woman intended on doing it. She called the bank. She told them what she intended to do. And fortunately, she didn't really feel right about it. In the middle of the evening, she actually got up at 2 a.m., and she called the business card that the fake agent had provided her. And it went into a voicemail that said, this is special agent so-and-so. And so it kind of calmed her nerves. She thought it was legit. She went back to bed, and she woke up a few hours later, still a little stressed out. And she did the smart thing, and she called the police. And the police very quickly determined that this was a scam. And guess who showed up the next morning? The real FBI. and those guys went to jail.
Wow.
But what could have happened?
Right. Just there's
is the, catastrophic.
That's correct. There's so many different ingenious ways to try to get these, you know, vulnerable people to part with their money. That one just happened to be something right out of a movie.
And it seems like they should have somebody to call. This woman was smart and called the police, but they should have either the trusted family member, trusted friend, or fiduciary, somebody that they can call and run it past, because she almost emptied her bank account and gave it to somebody.
That's correct.
So, Frank, you get involved in cases where you are the fiduciary. Have you ever kind of circumvented something like what Ray just described?
The more that we're in there up front, and you really want to make sure that if you're going to want somebody in there to protect your loved one, especially if you're back east, is to get us there up front, and then we can definitely stop it, because we just through our normal processes, we're doing it. But if you happen to get into the middle of it where it's already been done, then we have the resources and the law enforcement that helps in the whole case. There's adult protective services that really help. They actually take the reports up in the front end of that, and then they do some investigation themselves.
Tell me about this loan from mom to daughter, right? How much was it?
This is so common, Ryan. I have run across this so many times. One of the family members will go to mom, and they know that mom's starting to wear down. She's not as sharp as she was. She will do anything that the kids want them to do. And several thousand dollars later, they just gave one of the four siblings, you know, $400,000, $500,000. And we had a case in Orange County where they brought us in. We were a neutral party because there was three battling siblings. And we start going through all the paperwork and things, and then found the promissory note. And it was a good thing that we found a promissory note. A lot of times the elder won't do anything in writing, and then we're lost. Then we got to hope that we uncover it through conversations and things. But as far as that particular case, they wound up having a promissory note, and we were able to, because it's really unfair to the other siblings. Even though mom could do whatever they want to do, they can give the money out as much as they want as long as they have capacity. They really don't have enough capacity to make that final decision to say no to a several hundred thousand dollar loan like that. And then it takes away from the legacy that the rest of them are getting. So we got in the middle of that and realized there was a promissory note. And then we were getting ready to close the estate out because the mother did die eventually. And then we were able to get a settlement agreement. We had an attorney in the middle of us also. And we got the sibling that took the $450,000 loan to go ahead and pay back the other two siblings. So if we wouldn't have known about that loan, two of those siblings would have lost out on a $200,000 legacy just in that one part of the estate.
Wow. Well, we're talking with Frank Fiorito. He is a CEO and fiduciary with Exclusive Estate Administration. Now, Ray, you've mentioned this story. I've heard it a couple times, but I think it's a really good one. It was a caregiver down in, wasn't it, Coronado?
That's
is that
right.
Where it was, I think?
That's right.
Go with that one.
Back to the caregiver stories. I was contacted by the daughter of an elderly woman who lived on Coronado. She was in her 80s. She had Parkinson's, so the family had 24-hour caregiver to be there to make sure she was protected and safe. And the daughter came in one day and made an unannounced visit to her mom's home, and the caregiver was gone. The daughter walked into the caregiver's room and just kind of looked around and happened to notice one of her purses, or her purse, was tipped over, and there was a coin. The mother had bought a presidential gold coin, and that raised a red flag right there. And when the caregiver came back, she was confronted. They called the sheriff. They got a warrant. They went to her house. And the mother with Parkinson's had moved into this new home. So all the family property and heirlooms had been placed in boxes in the garage. But this caregiver systematically emptied every single one of those boxes. And it was kind of freakish. I saw over 100 pictures taken by the deputies that investigated it. There were family heirlooms like plates with the children's handprints that they made in kindergarten back in the 60s on the wall of this woman's house. There were throw carpets. Every dish, every spoon, every rug was all taken by this caregiver. She did go to jail. That's the good news. And also the good news is I sued the agency that placed her there because they failed to do a background check on her. They failed to properly supervise her. And ultimately, my client was made whole in terms of getting her stuff back, but never, you can never replace being a victim. So again, that's really the crime here. No one wants their parent to be victimized like that.
Yeah, right. Nobody wants that. That makes a lot of sense. That's an important point to make is that we are talking about the financial abuse, but there's a whole emotional side that comes with this, right? It's not just the money. What you guys have on here, telemarketing fraud and scams. We haven't talked about that a whole lot, but I have to assume that is very prevalent.
Oh, it is, Ryan. Boy, I tell you, once you get on a list, once you've been sucked in and you give them the information that they're looking for on the phone, you immediately get on a bunch of different lists, and then you're never going to be let go from it. So if anybody calls you on the phone and they seem like there's somebody that doesn't know you, I would just hang up. And do not give them any type of information at all over the phone, not your birth date. We had a case where they called up, asked for the birthday. Birth date. And then they called again and asked for something else. And they called about five different times, so the poor senior didn't know what was going on. She just kept giving information. Well, but after the fifth call, they had enough information to get any kind of credit they wanted the information from her.
You know, it is interesting. A lot of the elderly grew up in a generation without cell phones. Back at a time when the home phone rang, you answer it, right? And I have a home phone now specifically because my wife's parents don't have a cell phone. So when they're at my house, we need to be able to call them. That's the only reason I have the phone. So if they're at the house and the phone rings, I know it's not them, but they cannot. I come home to a laundry list of five messages of the guy I called who wants to know if I want solar, and the guy who called for a credit card, and the radio station who wants to do a survey. They leave me these messages every day. And this is a phone we never answer. It is interesting to see. It's just so ingrained in the older generation that when that phone rings, the home phone, you answer it. I don't know. Do you guys have a home phone that you ever answer?
No.
I never answer it. Never. Like, I turn the ringer off. I see this calling only because my TV displays that someone's calling me. And I don't know. It is really interesting. So, the older generation puts a lot of additional value on that phone that I think we just disregard.
Well, and that's where the isolation that you talked about earlier, Ray, comes in, too, is that some of them are lonely, so they pick up the phone. I mean, they are of the generation where they pick up the phone, but they also are lonely, and they enjoy speaking with whoever is on the other end of the phone. Isn't that true? Sense.
That's correct, and they're polite. And they're lonely, they're sympathetic, they're charitable. Older folks are very charitable. So when they get a sympathetic-sounding voice and presumably a good cause, they write the check, they don't know that necessarily it is either a bogus charity or it is a charity that is extremely inefficient in the way they distribute the money.
Got it. And so we touched on a variety of scams. There are many, many, many more out there. And that's one of the reasons I want to direct you to both the websites here. Ray Lewis, he is the founder and attorney with the Elder Protection Center. His website is elderprotectioncenter.com. One more time, elderprotectioncenter.com. As well as Frank Fiorito, CEO and fiduciary of Exclusive Estate Administration. Their website, eeadmin.com. That's the website, eeadmin.com. Both Karen and myself, I want to thank both you gentlemen for being with us today. Very, very good content. I hope everybody out there pays attention. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks,
Karen.
You.
Thanks for having us.
That was fun.
Until next week.